Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Just about Weber on the board. S&P futures up 875. NASDAQ futures up 18. Dow futures up 62. Kevin, how are you?
Oh, I'm so excited about the big news of the day that I'm just busting here.
The Cubs won?
No. ABBA's back.
ABBA's back.
The band?
The band?
Yeah, apparently they just released an album.
Oh, God.
A big reunion album. Isn't that what the world needed? You know, it's right up there with the what the world needs now is not Love, Sweet Love. It's ABBA, Sweet ABBA.
Never
was a big fan of Dancing Queen.
No. So, by the way, did you see what they're doing in China?
I think they shut down to listen to ABBA, didn't they?
No, they've banned effeminate men from TV. No more girly men on TV.
Yeah, you know, why we just refuse to... Why we get so outraged over all of our complicated, you know, gender type of issues and all of that here in the United States and just pay no attention whatsoever to China is beyond me.
There's nobody on the show we would have to toss if that was a law here, is there?
You know, that's hard to say. Yeah, people haven't seen me on the weekends.
What exactly is the definition of a girly man anyway? Is that like pornography? You can't define it, but you know it when you see it type of thing?
It probably does figure up there. Yep. So, yeah, I replayed the Uyghur interview for my... business ethics class last night.
What was the response? Wait a minute. Tell everybody what the Uyghur interview was.
Oh, well, you had what's the fellow's name? Now I can't remember his name.
Well, I know Angelica brought him on.
Yeah, Angelica brought him on. He's national. He's a national from the Uyghurs are ethnic Muslims in northwest China, and they
in a country that used to be their own country. It used to be a real country.
They were overrun in the late 40s by the Chinese army and taken over, and so they are in a province, the Xinjiang province, and they're basically they're enslaved. It's an ethnic group that the Chinese Communist Party would like to cleanse out of existence. They round up the men, they put them in concentration camps. Those who aren't in the camps are forced, and many who are in the camps are forced into slave labor. And they make a lot of products that then are exported around the world, and it's just a totally evil setup. What happens is when they take the men out of the household, often they put a Chinese man into the household.
Here's your new hubby. Here's your new hubby.
Yep, here's your new husband. And it's just, you know, it was you and Lou did the interview, and it was just incredibly compelling. And
Kevin, I can say that
in the archives. It's in the archives. I'd have to go back and pull up the date, and I can tweet it out. get done or when we take a break. But it's incredible to talk about how the Chinese Communist Party operates and then turn around and we buy parts, we source all kinds of stuff from China, and we also buy all kinds of products that are made in China. And it's almost impossible, we discussed it because we're talking about business, we're talking about sourcing. So I spent a lot of time on the purchasing function last night and purchasing ethics and what some companies do and, all of these things. We talked about slave labor in China. We talked about slave labor in the Congo where they're mining cobalt, which is important for cell phone usage. We looked at the supplier's code of ethics for Motorola, for Apple, for Samsung. We looked at Fairphone, which is a company that exists and manufactures cell phones just to avoid that kind of stuff, just to make sure everything is fair traded. So it's kind of an interesting topic and an eye opener for a lot of young people who really don't know much about this because we don't give it a lot of media coverage in the United States.
By the way, the guy you interviewed, his name was Kuzat Altay.
Yep, that's the guy. Yep.
Yep, and it was September of last year, so it's actually 1 year from today, September 3rd, 2020, exactly 1 year ago today.
No kidding.
I'm going to have to say, as the co-host of the show, because I think the people right here with me are pretty much the same as host as me, Maddie, I was never as nervous for an interview, ever. You've brought on, and Kathleen, brought on some pretty heavy people here, when I say heavy, pretty important people. I was never nervous, but I was nervous for that one. I mean, to the point where I was having trouble sleeping the night before, because Angelica told me that the guy's parents were still in China. And to be honest, I mean, the listeners know, if you get me a senator on here, I don't give a rat's behind. I'm going to ask him a question that I know the listeners want, whether he's uncomfortable with it or not. That's his problem. His or her. I mean, that's my attitude when somebody comes out. I mean, I'm not going to be rude about it, but this guy, she says, you can't ask all these questions that you're dying to ask because somebody in China is probably going to be listening if they know the guy's on because he's a national name here. And he's very worried about his parents in China. They're liable to take vengeance. And I'm going, okay. All I did was like say hello and the dude just like rattled off all the stuff over there that was bad. He didn't hold back at all. But I didn't ask him any of this stuff. Did I, Kevin? He just launched, which really made me feel better. Just saying.
Yeah, but you're right. And I told the class that. I told them that you were very concerned that you wouldn't be able to really explore deeply into what was going on because people who have left the country are so tightly monitored, and as a result, he might have to pull some punches on there, and he didn't pull any punches.
No,
he was totally totally honest about it.
Let me ask you a question.
It was something else.
What did your class think?
Pardon?
I mean, some old people just wander about and they see people going through stop signs and all this other kind of stuff, and they just assume like none of these young people give a crap about any sort of laws or any kind of things like that, and as long as they get their blue jeans cheaper, they don't care. I don't know that I believe that. I mean, Angelica really cared. Of course, she's from Ukraine. But, I mean, she really cared. She and her friends would constantly be talking about what was going on over there and in Russia, and people are bad things are being done to people. I mean, that was, she and her group, I mean, her personally, I thought she was very special in the sense that she actually, gave a crap about a lot of people other than herself. And what did you find with your students?
I found that they were, and we did this right before we took our break, and I said, any reactions to that? And they said, how about I digest this for 10 minutes first? Because, they really weren't aware. I had mentioned last week that we'd be doing it, so they knew something was coming that was gonna matter, but it really was an eye-opener for a lot of them. And then, as we talked about sourcing, you have to start thinking through from an ethical standpoint about how you go about doing this. because you have to make decisions about, you know, I need to be competitive or I don't have a business. Okay, I get that. So you're going to source some things from offshore. But by the same token, do you want to really contribute to that? And if you know that you're not buying product made in the Uyghur Autonomous Zone, which is a kind of a laugh that they call it the Autonomous Zone, because it isn't. But if you know that it's not coming from there, is it still unethical to buy something from another province of China? Do you need to be looking for different sources? And that really, you know, that turns back to, you know, this whole notion of sourcing. One of my ultimate messages is sometimes, you know, often enough, that if you do the right thing, it also happens to be the smart thing. And, I think there are some really smart things that businesses can do. But it's one thing when you're talking about Apple and Samsung and companies like that, or Nike. It's another when you're talking about, you know, a little manufacturing job shop that employs 25 people and needs to be competitive, and they're located in Elkhart County somewhere. You know, and you don't know the sources. I expect that a Nike or an Apple is going to send people to the factories that supply, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of parts, or even assemble their phones. They can't say they haven't seen anything. It takes willfully turning a blind eye, because nobody is going to have that big of a business relationship and not go kick the tires. But you're doing a lot on faith when you're a small business and you're importing materials. You have a contact and you have a price, but you're not running over to China on a regular basis.
Well, you know, Kevin, funny you should wander into this. Well, I mean, it's something we've talked about before, but I used to, at Pullman, one of my jobs, when I got hired as the young financial analyst, right? Well, the other guy was, two guys got hired in the same week. Me and Mikey. Mikey was also from the University of Chicago. We got hired.
Mikey, you like it?
Mikey's a good guy, but he was totally different than me. He had worked for Ford for a while. And the reason why people wanted to work for Ford out of grad school is, even though he didn't really want to go to Dearborn, Michigan, they paid overtime to their salaried people. So if you got hired for 18 grand at Ford, after 2 years, if you worked Saturdays, you were probably making 22 or 21.5, so you could tell your next employer you made 21.5. And to all the people in the world who think that people pay people because they're men or women or all this other BS, you basically get paid what your last guy paid you plus something. So, I mean, it's a screwed up system. I mean, women maybe are discriminated against, so are guys that weren't paid as much. Anyway, so I'm not going to go into that. But anyway, my job was, because Mikey was much better at filling out 18-column sheets of paper than I was, all the other stuff, the stuff I wanted to do, fell to me. And one of the decisions you had to make at Pullman, whenever they had a part, not every single day, but whenever there was a part for one of the rail cars, they would decide, okay, we make it in-house, we make it out-of-house. They called it a make-or-buy an assessment. So I did the make-or-buy assessment. Of course, at Pullman, you pretty much always wanted to make it, because there was always a machine someplace that was sitting there from the 1940s that wasn't being used, that you could use for this new part. So you didn't have to, there was no capital expense or anything. You just put some guy on it, and usually you can be, but your suppliers were Bloomer Fisk, you know, who was 63rd in state, or right over there. I mean, you knew who your suppliers were in the area. They were other stamping places. They were other this, they were other that. You really didn't have none of those kinds of decisions, Kevin, were even part of the piece of paper, and nobody even thought about it. I mean, you never dreamed that, you know, Bloomer Fisk had, you know, 18-year-old girls working in there in slave labor. I mean, it just didn't happen. Well, at least you never thought about it.
Or 15-year-olds.
Or 15-year-olds, yeah. I mean, so this stuff is kind of, is sort of, I don't even know what I'd do if they handed me that piece of paper and said, we're either going to make this ourselves or we're going to buy it. And I'd say, like, who are we going to buy it from? Well, you know, somebody over in Wuhan or someplace. And then all of a sudden this is part of the deal. I don't even know how I'd go about it to figure out how the hell they did stuff over there. But I'm going to say that I would guess people who are let's put it this way, more who care about this kind of stuff, are probably going to start to err on the side of, let's just make it ourselves. And you're going to see, you know, these little factories maybe expanding, and instead of buying 80 parts a year from now, they're going to be buying 65. And they're going to make the others themselves. I mean, at least the you know, the smaller ones, or we're going to make sure that the people we buy the bolts from or the nuts are from right around here, you know, so we don't have to worry about, you know, the container shortage.
I think so too, and I think, you know, it's going to be driven a lot by the you know, the ethics and what we're able to learn about our suppliers, but it's also going to be driven by the disruptions that we've experienced.
Yes.
and not wanting to be disrupted like that again. This is why, to keep tying things back to saying, you know, if I can't convince you to do it because it's the right thing to do, maybe I can convince you to do it because it's the smart thing to do. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we're going to be prone to disruptions like we've seen, and there's a lot of reasons for it, and certainly, you know, a global pandemic isn't something that happens every year, but it is something that happens every few years, you know, whether it's as severe as we've made it out to be, or we're as successful with the fear porn or whatever it is. But, you know, these are things that happen. And I think what we've learned, what a lot of businesses have learned over the last year and a half, is that your first priority was profit maximization. Your first priority is to make sure you can stay in business no matter what. It's the infinite game thinking that I've discussed before. And once you clear that hurdle, then you can start thinking about ways to be more profitable. And there's so much that's built into, you know, the quality management approach to how you run your business. There's so much of that where you can start wringing out costs that, you know, you can afford, you can't afford not, and let me put it this way, you can't afford not to have more reliable sourcing. And that could be as simple as just saying, I'm not going to go to the Far East anymore. Maybe I'm just going to go to, stay within the confines of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement.
Well, but
so I'm
going
to source in Mexico because I can go to Mexico. I can work with people in Mexico. I can go, you know, sit down in front of somebody if I have to. And, you know, whether that winds up being good for Mexico or not, whether it, you know, there's a whole issue of labor conditions there and how that works, I think that, you know, that becomes part of the equation. But maybe that level of engagement is how we get past some of those hurdles that we couldn't get past before now.
Well, when you go back in, sort of in history, when you had, I mean, I don't know if people even remember this, but let's just say in the Chicago area, clearly the Cleveland area, the area that now is now bars and restaurants, it used to be all manufacturing companies, or the Milwaukee area that you're very familiar with, Kevin. I mean, when you had these manufacturing areas, you would have a place, say, in Chicago, I'll just rattle off a few of them. You had 18, we had, what was the name of the place? The AT&T's... kind of throwing a blank. The place that made all the stuff, not Ameritech, before Ameritech.
You're talking about Cicero, the
yeah, what's the name
Hawthorne.
What was the name of the operation? Oh, I'll think of it. But you had those guys, you had Pullman, you had Southworks, you had American Can Company, Continental Can, I mean, I can't even begin, you had Rheem Manufacturing. So it made huge sense for a place like Bloomer Fisk, or for somebody who did, you know, who supplied nuts and bolts and fasteners and things like that, to be near all those places. Because if you got a call, you could deliver it this afternoon. One of our former clients, who unfortunately has passed on, he used to run, whenever there was a big electrical contract, there's fastener, he would have a truck full of fasteners. You know, he'd like race over to McCormick Place where he would know that the people put the plans together always screw up on the amount and quality of fasteners, screws and bolts and things that he used for electric, all the connectors from box to box. He would show up in his truck, and inevitably after day one, these guys are saying, "Hey, these idiots, they put these plans together, didn't give us enough of this or that." And he sourced virtually every big electric project here in the city, just by having everything available in his vehicles. So, I mean, you end up with this hubbub of stuff where there's people that, you know, not only just making sandwiches for people, that supply, I mean, why should I buy all the, because the problem comes down to, is what you're just alleging to, Kevin, if I decide I'm going to make all the bolts, for instance, for my new project, well, do I have to buy the bolt machine from China? It's really a lot better and more efficient if somebody's not too far away with all the latest bolt manufacturing and nut manufacturing stuff, because he can do it cheaper than me and I'm better to buy. That's how business evolves, to where somebody has the latest and greatest line of stuff to make the bolts. Somebody else has to make this thing. Somebody else makes that thing. And you assemble and you only make the stuff that really you can do better than other people. The problem comes when we started doing this stuff from overseas. Maybe the quality wasn't as good. Certainly in the beginning it wasn't, but then it became pretty good. Matter of fact, the guys will tell you now they have no idea how some of the machinery that comes from South Korea is that good and is at that price. At least that's the last time I went to the machinery show. They were telling me that. So, but I mean, you definitely, I mean, location makes a difference. So, when somebody puts the, you know, a huge plant, say in Kenosha, which of course they reneged on, you know, it's just kind of weird because all your suppliers, you would think, would want to be somewhere near Kenosha. I mean, right? It was sort of the, who was the gentleman we had, Matty?
Well, yeah, especially, you know, everybody wants to do just in time.
Yeah.
Just in time, you know, as we have learned over the last year and a half, doesn't work real well if your suppliers are far away, because if it's disrupted, your just in time just became just not, you know, not coming at all. So you know there's this idea that some safety stock, at least in critical parts, you know, like chips, is important, and that maybe you can do just in time better if that if your supplier is nearby, because it's not, your supplier is not subject to disruptions elsewhere in the world that you can encounter. I mean, it's as simple as this. People over here talk about this all the time. When Chinese New Year rolls around, and the custom in China is for people to go back to the home villages for weeks, as just part of tradition, they have to order ahead of that and stock ahead of that, no matter what kind of smooth inventory management they like to have. They have to stock for the idea that for most of February they aren't getting anything out of their suppliers. That's a disruption of its own. Well, you know what? You don't have to deal with that if your supplier is up the road.
Well, plus
if
your
supplier is two states away, even
if you're really into it, you almost can't do that, because it's supposed to come right to the factory floor, and there's room for one pallet that lasts 1 week or whatever it is, and you really don't have room for four pallets stacked up everywhere along in the factory. So you almost can't.
Yeah, but the way we do it now is because there's a travel factor in the products, the parts you buy, because of that, somebody's got to stock them.
Right, somebody.
It might not be me, because I have buying power, so it might be a distributor who has to stock them. But sooner or later, someone's going to hold those parts.
That's true.
Because you can't just ship them from China or Malaysia or someplace like that. You can't just ship them and know that if it's out the door, if I need it tomorrow, it's going to get here. There is a time lag built into that.
By the way, last night I was having a serious business powwow and an adult beverage with a group of my buddies that work still on some of the firms that are on the floor and so forth. Well, one of the guys, did you ever shoot an air rifle? Or an air pistol?
Yeah, you shoot your eye out, kid.
I mean, at an adult level?
No.
Well, but these guys have a place where he wants me to come. They do air rifle shooting, and these guns are...
But the kind like with the CO2 cartridges and all that?
I guess, so, yeah. I mean, I never saw one. That's why I kind of want to go. And evidently, they're all made in Germany, and some of them were made 50 years ago, and they're still good. And you go and shoot air rifles and drink beer. Doesn't sound all that bad.
What could go wrong there?
Well, I think you shoot first, drink after. I think that's the deal. But anyway, they get all these. It's a German club of some kind, and evidently they get all these German beers. Well, guess what? You can't get German beers over here because there's a container shortage. And one of Audrey's
pals. It's not a shortage. They're just in there all the wrong places.
Well, it's sort of the same thing, but. A shortage for me is a shortage, right? Anyway, so And then Audrey's friends that work in the liquor business, they have the same problem getting stuff in from France. Good luck getting some Dom, you know, if you want some nice champagne. Not that we don't have good sparkling wine here, we do, but if you want, I guess there's a shortage of that. You can't get a container to get your champagne over here. The world is getting really bad if you can't even buy booze, Kevin. It's bad. Just saying.
Yeah, because you can't even drown. You know, things are bad enough, and you need to be able to drown them in something.
So if I have season tickets, we've got to go break here, for the Hawks and the Bulls, and I don't feel like showing my card or get a test the day before I go, can I get my money back from these bleeps?
That's an interesting question.
I'm going to bet no. And I'm going to bet I'd be pissed off because I have no intention. For full information, I think next week is when I'm supposed to go for my second shot because they told me to wait like 6-8 weeks. And I've already had the COVID. I'm not worried about going anywhere and catching it again because I already had it. And I have no intention of ever showing anybody my card, ever. So if it lets me, means I can't go to a Bulls or a Bear game or whatever, you know, I'm okay with that, Kevin. I'm just out on this stuff.
Have they decided that?
Yeah, United Center. And, you know, after break, we'll talk about some other thing that came up this morning. SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 25. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm always missing my Weber on the board. S&P futures are up 8.25. We got NASDAQ futures up 26. The last 2 days, we've started out strong and then strong most of the day, and it kind of leaked a little on the close, at least in the NASDAQ, but NASDAQ's been so high, it's not like we're leaking at all. It's just going to be sliding a little bit at the end of the day. We got the big labor report this morning. We have Carl Denninger to talk about it, and he'll be in a little bit, another half hour, which is going to be interesting because the ADP report was a clunker, and yet the jobless claims number was really good, so we'll see what this one says. Over in Europe, now these guys were like flat yesterday. They've been slow all week. DAX up 18.1%. FTSE up 13.1%. CAC round down 27.4%, so still pretty sleepy. Nikkei up 584. Wow, 2%. Maddie, we don't want this to happen to you ever when you're like CEO or president or something. Japan's Nikkei 225 jumps 2% as Prime Minister Suga steps down.
Yeah, you don't want growth after you quit at a celebration.
Yeah, you don't want people to, Manny Weber quits XYZ after 50 years of being CEO, stock doubles. You don't want that. Just saying. Shanghai down 15.4%. Hang Seng down 188, that's 0.7%. So the rest of China's not cheering the guy being out. Yesterday the Dow was up 131, S&P up 12, NASDAQ up 21. When I talk about the NASDAQ sneaking down, it was the futures. So, yeah, the markets themselves were up new records everywhere. After all, as my client told me, the Fed is going to keep the market up forever. Why are you worried? Well, okay. I guess I can roll with that. 10-year up 1.29, up 1/100th of a basis point. The Bund minus 0.38. Japan unchanged at positive 0.04. We've got oil up 15 cents, up over 70, 70.14. Brent up 37 cents, 73.40. Natural gas unchanged at 4.63. But boy, that's high. Where did we get down to, Betty? 2.60 to one time? Like almost doubled? Wow. RBOB is up a penny at 2.18. And we've got gold up $6, 18.17. Silver up 22 cents, 24.14. Copper unchanged at 4.30. And we've got Bitcoin up 4.99 at 49,869. Trying to cut through 50,000. Maybe it will. It's up 1% today. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're actually off to a really good start here on the area expressways here for a Friday morning. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking good, too. Southside expressways are all quiet. I will jump in and let you know if that should change. But right now, there's no significant crashes or delays to report. So off to a good start. Weather today, another nice late summer day, although more cloud cover today, will be mostly overcast and a high of 77. Right now it is cloudy and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 101 today. Right now it's clear and 80. In sports, White Sox were off last night. They're back in action tonight down in Kansas City. That's a 7:10 Central Time first pitch. Cubs won their third straight. They came from three runs down to beat the Pirates 6-5 in 11 innings. Diamondbacks were off. They'll host the Mariners tonight. That's a 6:40 Arizona time first pitch. And of course, college football is underway and is underway in earnest tomorrow. But there's been games last Saturday and Wednesday and last night. And then tonight, Northwestern gets their season kicked off. They'll take on Michigan State at 8 p.m. tonight, opening with the Big Ten team, which a lot of Big Ten teams are this year, which is a new thing. And Notre Dame starts their season on Sunday down at Florida State. Chief.
You think they're trying to jump the TV as much as they can early on? I mean, they're all over the place, these college games. It's like bowl week, for God's sake.
Well, college football, once the NFL starts, they don't play on Sunday or Monday or Thursday quite as much. I think there are some Thursday games. But when the NFL's not playing, they'll play 7 nights a week. And when the NFL is playing, they'll play 4 or 5 nights a week. I mean, they have no shame in their game. They'll play play every night.
The on the way in this morning, Kevin, I was hearing about, oh, by the way, the Cubs, for the first time in like a gazillion years, it's the first time ever that two guys on one team that are over the age of 29 have been rookie of the month. The last other season was like somewhere where one guy was 35 and somebody else was 29 or something. But the Cubs had two guys like almost right in a row being rookie of the month. It's like never happened.
Yeah, Patrick Wisdom and Frank Schwindel, rookies of the month, and Patrick Wisdom could win rookie of the year. He has, what, 25 home runs and has been really good. He's pretty good defensively, too, even though he had an error last night. But, yeah, I was actually going to crunch some numbers and send it out to our internal group here, just comparing since the trade, Schwindel, Ortega, and Wisdom versus Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez, and see which three players have been better offensively since the trade. I'm willing. I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm willing to bet that the latter three.
Well, you're comparing Baez to Ortega. It's not even close.
Well, I'm willing to bet that Ortega, Schwindel, and Wisdom have been by far better than Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez. But I don't know that for sure. I got to crunch the numbers.
Well, they're missing the pitchers more.
Yeah,
than they
but
are.
I suspect you're right, Matt. Though I think you will be. Hey, you know, the series of the weekend is that the Giants and the Dodgers are going to play this weekend, and they are tied right now.
Wow.
The Brewers just took 3 out of 4 in San Francisco, and so for a day, the Dodgers were in first place. Now they're tied.
What is wrong with the Bo Sox? I haven't been to Triple E that much, but I've been a few times, and, man, a couple guys that go in there, the Boston fans are always kind of weird anyway, but I mean, these guys are pounding them. It seems like they're always playing the Yankees or always playing Tampa Bay or Toronto, and they just can't win. I mean, they were in first place most of the year, weren't they?
They were in first place.
Actually, I think Tampa's probably spent the most time in first place.
Yeah, Tampa's been in first place pretty much all year. Boston was got off to a great start, and then they've kind of fallen back. Right now, Boston has the second wild card spot. But they're 2 up on Oakland and 4 up on Seattle for that second wild card spot. So it looks like they're in good shape to make the playoffs. But in the AL East, they're in third place and they're 8 games back of the Rays.
But I watch them play
and
the Rays.
Their wild card opponent right now would be the Yankees.
Yeah, which that would be interesting. Wow,
that's just one game.
I have to look at the playoff schedule.
Well,
I think it's still a play-in game.
Last year, yeah, they did. Last year they did best of three, but they added teams. This year, I think it's back to what it was the year before.
Best of three.
I think it's going to be one game.
Well, I thought when they added the teams, there was the one game play-in to the best of three. I don't know. We should probably check that out. It's changing like all the time. So Kevin, I hear on the way in this morning that they're trying to pass either already did or trying to pass a law regarding boys and girls sections in stores, and how if you have more than 500 employees, you got to have like a neutral section. I mean, what am I missing, Kevin? I remember years ago, not that many years ago, I was in an L.L. Bean store, and I said, "How come you guys are always out of larges and extra larges and like the sweatshirts and stuff?" And lady says, "Well, because we totally misread how many ladies, teenagers, how it became, you know, the guys' hoodies are, you know, generally considered better, even though they're not. Because the girls want to come and buy the guys' hoodies, and they wear them for going to football games. They just put them all over the rest of their stuff, and they want a big, baggy size. That's the style." But she never said we were going to stop girls from buying the guys' stuff or anything like that. So why all of a sudden do you have to have an area that is like gender neutral? Like, who cares? I mean, what does somebody do spending their 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, worrying about getting a law like that passed? If it was that popular, somebody would put up a store and said, "Guess what? We don't have any boys or girls spots. We just got stuff all over the place. Come shop here." I don't get why this has to be part of the law, Kevin. I mean,
well, and that's, you know, I think you're right on with this, Tom, in that, you know, if it really is an important and thing that's going to have a lot of customer appeal, then you'll find places that will just do it. Why do we need to legislate it when we can just take? But I feel the same way about a lot of things. You know, for instance, mask mandates. Why don't you just say, you know, put your mask policy up on your door? If people, you know, if it matters to people, then they will come into your joint. And you know, because everybody's going to be wearing a mask. If it doesn't matter to people, you're not saying nobody can wear a mask to come into my place, but you're saying I'm not going to make you. And everybody's informed, and they have it. I don't know why we lost track of that way of thinking, but we have.
We absolutely
have. We feel like we have to legislate everything.
Well, who's the guy who was I should know him because he's a contributor on CNBC. The guy who was Trump's COVID guy, like other than Fauci, the guy with the dark hair, he must dye it. How was that for?
Oh, no, not Scott Atlas.
No, Gottlieb. Is it Gottlieb?
That is I think I know. Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
But yesterday they asked him. He said, "You know," he goes, "we can't lose sight of the fact that right now 40 to 45% of the people, at least in this country, have already had it and are immune." He goes, "We don't have to worry about them anymore, at least for like quite a while." I mean, you know, so he said, "You know, we can't lose sight of that when we put all these hardships on people going everywhere that really 40 to 45% of the people don't need our help right now." I mean, but we have lost sight of that. I mean, I for one.
Well, and then how many people are vaccinated, and then you subtract out the overlap on there, and so you know what are you really trying to legislate? Because if you're vaccinated, either the vaccine works, which is a big deal,
yep,
and so people don't need to worry, or the vaccine doesn't work, and if it doesn't work, then why are we getting them?
Well, I read something the other day from Israel. Now, maybe it wasn't the best of tests, but they claim that the Pfizer vaccine is down to 38% effective. Now, again, it's one test. Don't take this to the bank. Only 38% effective from stopping people from getting it. But it's still like 90% effective at you being real sick or worse. Which I think I actually think that test is probably pretty right, but I mean, yesterday they were talking about the 56 schools.
If it's not effective in stopping you from getting it, then who cares whether you're vaccinated?
Well, that's exactly right.
I mean, the numbers just don't make sense.
No, but plus the strategy.
We're at the point where you want to say, if you want to get vaccinated to protect yourself, go ahead. But you're not doing anything to anyone else.
No, and I think it's something we have an overriding attitude, Kevin, and it really goes across all kinds of what's going on in the world. I mean, we just had a huge hurricane. We had a big, obviously big rainstorm in New York, and I sense that in the last 10-15 years that there's been a little bit of an increase in weather that has sort of changed a little bit and gotten more severe in some areas. Now, maybe I bet you can find in history other times where that sort of happened. But I also know, because we have a friend who's a chemist and worked for NOAA forever, that what mankind has done has messed with the oceans probably more than the land. But the carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide in the water has caused a little bit of an issue. Now, man probably contributes to that, and you know, so does a forest fire, so does a volcano that happens to go up, which we haven't had in a few years, thank God. But the idea that if I can tell my neighbor to not use his car, somehow I'm all for global warming and I'm making a difference. Give me a friggin' break, Kevin. I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, same thing with this COVID, man. I mean, these schools now, an outbreak is defined as two kids getting it. Now, if everybody's going to get it anyway, and it's down to a level where if you're vaccinated, virtually everybody comes out of it. Not everybody. There's always going to be somebody who has a reaction to it. If we protect the people that are the most vulnerable until it's over, really, and the other people, the last thing you want mentally is to have two kids in a school, oh my God, close the school. And then a month from now, you open up again, two more kids get it. And oh, by the way, in a week, they're fine. You close the school. We can't be doing this for a decade, Kevin. I think we're at the point where we're just going to have to let the thing go. Get yourself vaccinated, and if you get it, you get it. And, you know, you got a 99.5% of chance of survival. You might, I mean, it's getting there. If it's not there already, I hate to say that, but we can't. I don't think we can beat this thing. We gave up on the common cold, right? We gave up on the flu. We got flu shots. We do the same thing with flu shots. We have people take the flu shots so you don't get it as bad. We never think that we're going to put a barrier around the country and nobody's going to get the flu this winter, do we? I mean, we're not that foolish, are we? Maybe we are.
Well, we're going to, you know, the flu kills people too, so we're going to have to start you know, adjusting to that too. We're going to have to start legislating around that.
I mean, the idea that we can like,
because we've adopted the zero COVID mentality now, that, you know, it has to be eradicated 100% for us to lead anything resembling a normal life.
Well, and I don't. We have four COVID colds or whatever what doctor told me, and they're still around. You know, the H1N1 from 1918 is still around. It's mutated to a spot where if I get it, I have a nasty whatever flu for a week, and I'm okay. Usually I'm okay. Not if I'm compromised, I may not be okay. I'm not. I absolutely. Audrey has this Asian doctor. He's a terrific guy. Real bright. Was at the University of Chicago's faculty, so he's not just a potion kind of guy. But he said one of the biggest problems when educating your population is that most people don't realize 120,000 people die every year from cold and flu. So when something gets in the news, they're going to think that, God, you know, it's our job to make sure nobody ever dies from anything. Well, hell, I'd like that. I'd like my parents back. I'd like my grandparents back. But it's not the way that works. I mean, unfortunately. Right? I mean,
it is kind of the unfortunately that isn't the way it works. And, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago now about, you know, alternate treatments and why would insurance companies be discouraging doctors from doing, you know, some of the treatments that appear to be pretty successful. And Carl, talk to Carl about this before the numbers come out, because after the numbers you're going to be totally on jobs. But he wrote about this a couple days ago, and that is, why would insurance companies dictate to doctors? Because remember, we had that video from the one doctor who said, "Hey, I'm a direct primary care doctor. I'm not beholden to insurance companies. I don't take insurance." You know, I just take subscription dollars, so I treat the way I see fit. Well, because early on in the pandemic, the government granted immunity from liability for a series of things, including the mRNA and the viral vector vaccines, and things like remdesivir or some of the other drugs that people have, you know, tried to treat it with, and then others they didn't grant immunity from any liability. So what's your insurance company going to push you to do? Anything that has immunity from liability, because they don't want to pay out.
Right.
So, yeah, this, you know, we've compromised our medical care system to bias away from, treatments in the case of COVID-19. And instead to do things that have marginal value at best. And so, you know, and get Carl to talk about this.
Well, Kevin, it's I have a question for you on the educational side. One of the things we did, I'm going to say that I was in a pretty serious graduate program, University of Chicago. And they, you know, they love to teach business, but you had to take a couple of courses in other stuff, which, you know, I'll use the term application of business. It was guys that were doing mathematical analysis of care in hospitals, and we did a lot of stuff on. I thought one of the hardest things was designing corporate compensation packages to get the people to do what you wanted them to do. In other words, a long term view of your company, and it was really hard to do that. You know, when you're trying to attract the best talent, and some people just want all their money right up front, you know, well, that's fine, but you want the firm to be here 50 years from now, not just the guy get a bonus and leave after a year. So these things are really hard to do. But one thing that you learn to reflect on, because if you didn't in any paper that you put in there for these few professors I talked to, I mean, the red lines are all through your crap. I think you do personally, but we always had to, okay, if we do this, I mean, we would actually critique, I mean, people, they would say, here are some guys coming in to be a CEO of this firm, and this is what they used to do before, and this is what this guy's expecting, and blah, 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 and somebody would design a compensation package, or everybody would. Well, the guy'd pull out one paper, you didn't want it to be yours, it was like Rodney Dangerfield in front of you, right? And he'd write up on a blackboard, well, back when he had blackboards, and he'd write up there, okay, what this is what this person wants to do. We have this bonus after this month, this after this month, and we're going to have this, and we have this stock option. And, you know, some of them got pretty complicated. And the class would sit there and critique it and say, wait a minute. This guy's going to, you know, if he wants to pollute a river, and everything's a 3-year plan, but by the time they catch him polluting the river, he's out of here. So you can't. So I mean, every conceivable thing in that plan, people extended it out like 50 years and said, "You know, what are you doing? This thing sucks." Basically, you know, yeah.
The question is, what's the intent versus how do you game it? Make it line your pocket.
No, actually,
there's always going to be people who game it. You're going to get what you reward.
Well, I'm not. What I'm saying is, When we see these bills and we see these policies, we jam them through because the press has got the microphone in somebody's face, and would even Pritzker and Lightfoot, who I've been casting stones against the whole time here, I mean are they being forced to sit down and reflect? Or if he does something, does he at least have the intelligence? I think he doesn't. I mean, he's a dumb guy. He's not, but I mean, does he at least have the intelligence to lob one out there? Then the next morning, call up 3 or 4 people from each side of the aisle in the Congress and say, come on over for breakfast, let's talk about this. And what's wrong, what's right, does anybody have a better idea, what are the long-term repercussions of this? Because the places I see closing, the people not doing, I think the long-term repercussions are horrendous, Kevin. Did anybody even think about them?
If you're going to think about what's in some of the legislation, orders, et cetera, you would have to read them first. And how many people in government do you think read all these things?
Not very many, because what was it, 20,000 pages? I'm not sure I would either.
Well, yeah. So, I think the best rule, and this would be a Senate rule, a House rule, in state legislatures. And it would be that before you vote, you have to certify that you've read it in its entirety, under oath.
Well, I also
and we get shorter bills.
Well,
shorter bills out of that.
We used to have Senator Matt Murphy on once in a while before he resigned, and one of the things he said that they did at the Illinois level, and it was like one reason. There was a name for it, but something like one topic, one bill. So the bill would just be about a topic. You wouldn't have 48 things or 148 things you wanted to do that you weren't going to put through the Senate by itself, or the House, or both. We got to go through both. So you'd wait for like a transportation bill, and you'd put like the dental stuff in there or some crap, just because you're looking for a bill. I would stop that in a second. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, there's no reason to read the whole bill, because most of the whole bill has nothing to do with what the title of the bill.
Yep.
Which I think is kind of, but I mean, you know, at the end of the day, there's people in there that are getting paid money or being specified to have certain contracts to do these kinds of things. And the money is, to them, it's enormous. I mean, right now, look what's happening to the people that I manage money for. I mean, they are convinced that the government right now is going to print enough money on every single day to prevent the market from even having a 2% correction, much less 50 or something, which some of these stocks look to me like, 50 might be easy. But, they're convinced that this, and since we've got this thing now where we just print money, there's nothing we can't fix by just printing money and throwing at it. Oh, the population's not doing so hot. The people that are making $35,000 a year look like they're having a problem with inflation's ad. Print them another $5,000 check, send it out there. We'll make up for it. Kevin, how do people that read any sort of history? I mean, for God's sakes, the Romans did that. Look where they ended up. Is it really that easy? Let's just print it and send it out. I mean, and yet if you asked anybody, you said, well, what if all of a sudden everybody who has $20 in their pocket, we gave them another 20? And now you got 40. Are you twice as rich? Kevin, there's not a seventh grader that would say, no, it doesn't work. I mean, yet, how is it the partial part, as long as I'm getting mine, that somehow it works? I mean, I can't even have this discussion with people because they're so foregone into it that they somehow think that it, yet if you ask them the long-term question, What if we just double the amount of money? Is everybody in the country rich? They'd say, well, no, it doesn't work that way. And yet, why are we, by piecemealing it, it's okay, right? I mean, do we really think that sending...
Bit by bit, it's okay. That's pretty harmless.
But same thing is...
Until it's not.
Sending a second grader to test positive for COVID home to his family and shutting the school down, that's okay. We'll open it up in a month and we'll try it again, like forever. I mean, to me, like, that's... I don't know what... That's not a good idea. Now, whether you should let everybody just get it or not, I don't know about that either. But the fact is, what we're doing now is not a good idea. With the teachers' union going crazy,
it's just not doing anything. We're only getting the downsides of the policy without any benefit.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the matter of fact. I was on. Everybody knows I had some heart rhythm problem a while back that seems to be fine. And I asked the doctor. I said, on the blood thinners, I said, what if you just cut them in half? And he goes, if you cut them in half, you get all the bad parts. If somebody sticks you with a knife, you're going to bleed out, but you're not taking enough to get any of the good parts to where it actually dissolves a clot, right? So that's not what you want to do, Kevin.
Okay, just asking.
Yeah, no, that's not what I want to do. So Kevin, yeah, I think we need to. But I think that's great that you were that you dug out that old interview, and if we were to send it out to people, I think it'd be cool. Maybe we.
Maddie did tweet it out already.
He's the best now. No,
he's on stuff, isn't he?
See, now Manny has a problem because he's way bigger than his wife. So if he ever wanted over in the ladies section, he has to make sure he buys her size. Just saying.
Yeah, you know what? There's reasons I don't buy clothes for women.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's
one is because you know if I buy too big, they're going to say, "What do you think? What the hell do you think I am?" And if I buy too small, it doesn't fit.
Oh, no, it's so. I don't think you have to worry about guys going jewelry, over in that section.
No jewelry, it works all the time.
You know, you don't have to worry about guys going over to the other section. I don't think too much. It's, but you know, when I was looking for an extra large hoodie one year, and they said all the girls had bought it, I was sitting there, hey, what are they doing over in my section? But, it was okay. It's all right, I guess. But then when I got to be...
We are doing all kinds of things that, you know, that are counter to the notion of not caring, you know, that we aren't supposed to care about other people's race, inclinations, sexual preferences, any of that, and yet we keep creating policy built around that, which makes no sense either.
Kevin, if Gladys Kravitz ran for president, she'd win in a landslide.
Yeah. Well, I always call the people who find their way into government condo board refugees. You know, when sticking their nose into everybody's business via being on a condo board doesn't work anymore, you have to run for office.
Oh, God. Kevin, have a nice weekend, buddy. SP Futures up 6, Nancy Futures up 20. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger. We got their labor numbers in 1/2 hour.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here. What it is. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 6. Nasdaq Futures up 21. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing well.
It's your the big day, the day that you shine even more than other days. Labor
Day. Well, you know, yeah, it's that interesting day for sure. So I think we're, you know, one of the things that I spotted last month, to see if this trend continues, which is the disappearance of people out of the labor force. And not just from the labor force, but from the non-institutional population. Remember, we talked a little bit about that when I caught it during the, you know, while we were on the air last month. And that's a very ominous number, because it's one that can't be toyed with by other agencies. So it's, yeah. So the nice thing about non-correlated data sets is they're fabulous in that when somebody's tampering with something, which, you know, no, the government never lies to us by any means. They always tell the truth. They always seem to forget that there are other parts of the government, which I guess is the curse that comes with things being so large you don't really understand what they are anymore. You know, we pass 3,000-page bills without reading them, that you'll get caught by virtue of the fact that someone else in some other department is collecting the same data, but they're not using your sources, and therefore you can't screw with them.
Yeah, well, I have two questions for you, serious ones before we get into the labor stuff. One is, in the Chicago area, I mean, enough people have told me that, you know, well, they can't hire this, they can't hire that, they can't hire this. And the party line has always been, you know, somebody sitting on his fat behind in a sofa or some lady, and they're getting their money from the government, and they're just sitting there having a beer.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe originally there was some of that, but right now it's happening at so many different levels. Carl, mechanics, people like these are people that actually make a good living. I mean, I wonder, and we talked about it with John Flanagan, who actually was a census guy for a while. Last year, and he's thinking that the number of April 1st, 2020 was the official census date at which the number is from Chicago came out. I honestly think, Carl, that these people are gone. I mean, I think that certainly in the Hispanic community, why would anybody, and I'm not singling them out, but a lot of the kitchen help and things like that come from that area. I mean, I think that the idea that people sat around here for 15 months waiting for the phone to ring for a $10 an hour job, the people think like that, and I did that for a while. I think we're a bunch of dummies. People left. Audrey was telling me one of her friends went down to Florida and was a waitress on the keys and shorts and a t-shirt in the sand for 6 months and made $65,000. She couldn't wait to get out. She said, why am I going to wait around here for a phone to ring when these guys are pushing everything off by months and 2 months every day? Because, I mean, I think that if you were to take the population here, I mean, I have no way of proving this, but if you were to take the population of Chicago from April 1st to wherever you think your census was until now, I think you're down a boatload. I mean,
on a national, but I think you're right. And frankly, now that you've got, Mr. Corpulent Pritzker, that's tampering with things again.
Yep.
Okay. Because he just can't leave it alone. You know, it's one of the qualities of projection that he has, in that, oh my, I'm at terribly high risk no matter what happens. Therefore, everybody else has to, you know, kneel at my feet and lick my shoes. By the way, I'm the one that shoved all that food and whatever else went down that pie hole over the previous however many years it took for him to get to that size. But that's everybody else's problem. It's not my problem. So, you know, this has become sort of the king has decreed, okay? And the problem is, if you're an ordinary person and you listen to this back and forth, and you see this back and forth, and it's, you know, and it's always, well, you know, okay, if you go get jabbed, you get your life back. Everything goes back to normal. That's what we were sold in January and February this year, if you remember. I didn't believe it for a moment. And although at that point I'd not had COVID, now I have, I didn't go get it when it was available because I didn't believe it. I didn't believe on the science it was going to be durable protection and it was going to actually work. I didn't like the risk profile from the adverse effects. And I also did not believe the politicians that if I went and did this, that they would leave me alone. Well, as it turns out, that last point was more than justified.
Yeah.
Hearing what's going on up in Illinois now. And not just Illinois, in other places too. So part of the thing is, if there are places you can go where you don't have to deal with that BS, and there are, why would you not?
Well, I'm going to push back just a hair. As you know, I'm no big fan of the governor's, but I listened, this is in the depths of the COVID, and I've probably told the story before. In the depths of the COVID, I'm driving home from the burbs, and for some reason he was having the news conference like every day. This is back, you know, a year and a half ago. And Kyle, it is really difficult in today's world of the press or whatever we want to call them. I'm here and I didn't see it. I'm listening to it on the radio, and I'm going to say four out of five of the people with the questions were female. No, it doesn't. I'm just telling you what it was. I'm not making any sort of aspersions one way or the other. And one of the governors had just had a full mask mandate and shut down something and something, and he was up there basically saying, "I'm not ready to do that yet. This is early on," and the abuse he was taking from these women. I mean, the guy didn't have a chance to talk. He had some last like one stupid question. He was gone, but I mean, they made Gladys Kravitz look like a kid. I mean, what do you mean that you're not going to have a mask mandate? Don't you care about people? Does the governor of Michigan care more about their population than you do? I mean, it was brutal. And basically, the next day, whatever it was, he issued the mandate. I mean, he couldn't stand up to the abuse, but he was getting... So isn't like every death, if you don't force people to wear a mask, you know, when the Michigan governor did, every excess death in Illinois, isn't it on your head? I mean, they were on this guy like nothing I've ever heard of, Carl. I mean,
I know. And you know what? This is, but, you know, who thinks this is new? Okay. If it bleeds, it leads has been, you know, the mantra of the media for how long? Right? I mean, forever. Right? It's not a new phenomenon. You know, if you don't like the heat, stay out of the kitchen. If you want to be a governor, you want to be a mayor, you want to be a whatever, okay, you have to balance the benefits and harms of the policies you promote. You look at what just happened in Chicago. Lightfoot comes out and says every single person that has any contact with Chicago public schools must be vaccinated. Okay, guess what? 10% of her bus drivers gave her the finger and walked off the job.
Yeah.
All right, now what? Now how do the kids get to school? Because you are talking about people who do not have the money or the ability, because they have to go to work, to run the kid to the school building and, you know, drop off the front. Hey, you know what? In some places where I used to live in Northwest Florida and where I used to live up there, you know, near Northbrook, hey, you know, it's no big deal. You know, mommy or daddy shows up with a nice, you know, $80,000 SUV and the kid, or the Lambo or whatever, and the kid hops out and, you know, goes into New Trier. Okay, fine. Guess what? It don't work that way in the city.
No.
Okay? And then what is her next proclamation? Well, you know, we'll pay for Ubers and Lyfts to take the kids to school and back home. Guess what? Uber and Lyft don't require their drivers to be vaccinated.
They do so make it more.
So you just took the most efficient way of getting people from one place to another by land transportation, which is a bus.
Well,
and
plus,
destroyed it in favor of what?
Well, we've kind of I got another one here I want to talk about, though, because we wish we could solve the COVID thing today, but unfortunately we can't. But listen here. Your buddy, Jeremy Siegel, noted economist. I don't know if he's my favorite economist, but how do you get out of this trick box, Carl? I've heard Jeremy Siegel on TV, Wharton School finance professor, basically criticize the Fed, you know, like gently for like printing too much money, and basically saying that that's not, you know, not really what you want to do going forward. And this is obviously my area of concern because it concerns the stock market, it concerns my clients. But now they've done so much and they're pouring it in there so much. Like I mentioned earlier, I had more than one client last week say to me, "Why are you worried about the market when everybody knows the Fed was never going to let it go down?" And I said, "Well, let's just say I don't trust the Fed as much as you do," was my answer. Which, what else can I say? I mean, because I've seen them out of control before when I broke into the business, and it's not pretty. It's just not pretty, and it's not good for anybody. But now, Jeremy Siegel, who's been a market bull the whole way, because he obviously gets the part where, if the more money they pour in, the more the market's going to go up. If you can somehow keep interest rates down, which somehow they've managed to do, and they've managed to talk the investing public by buying the stuff themselves, that we're going to give us 10 money for 10 years at 1%. And oh, by the way, the real rate of interest is -6, and we'll give you back whatever. I mean, it's been kind of a real goat bleep in my opinion. But now he comes out this morning and says, "Hey, guess what? The Fed was now, if they pull back at all, they're going to now cause the next significant correction in the stock market." Well,
absolutely.
So let me get this straight. If I jump on you from behind where you can't see me, and I got my foot on your neck or my knee on your neck, so you're numbing up. Now, if I pull my knee off, am I going to cause your neck to be sore now because you're not numb anymore? I mean, at some point, I got to get off your neck, right? I mean, and if all of a sudden that causes a little bit of a problem, I guess I'm going to have to deal with it. I mean, I never should have been on your neck in the first place, right? I mean, how do you do both here?
Well, see, that's the whole thing is that and I think what most people miss here is that the scale of what has happened since the 2007-2008 disaster has continually advanced. And the few times that the Fed has, you know, has quote-unquote tapered or pulled back or, you know, whatever language you wish to use, the market has reacted very badly to that. And you know, not without cause. I mean, look, when you take $60 billion a month and you stuff it into the markets, well, guess what? Goes somewhere. People buy something with it. And what do they buy with it? Well, to a significant degree, they buy where they think they're going to get some leverage. Where do you get leverage? We get leverage in common stocks, right? So, and that's, you know, without getting into having to do esoteric things. So that's the leveraged instrument that common people have access to. Now, you know, if you're a trader like myself, well, I can play in the futures market where I get plenty of leverage. I get all that I want. I can play in FX where I get even more and enough to blow my brains out in about 15 minutes. And you know, you can play in options and things like this. But for the common person, what they don't think about stuff like that. They think about, well, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy some Amazon, right? So that's the, you know, the kind of the world we live in. But then you have to look at this from the other, you know, the other point of view, which is that when something's selling at 100 times earnings or 200 times earnings or 500 times earnings, for how long does that go on, and what happens when it stops? Do the earnings go up by a factor of 50 to make it rational?
Well, that would be nice. That would be nice.
Price go down.
Well, that would be nice if we use the term grew into it. But Carl, the reason why I got me on this rant was yesterday there was a bunch of earnings plays, right? And I look at all of them because I like doing volatility plays, and I couldn't find one yesterday I liked. But now when I see these companies that, like, I've never even heard of, which is my fault. It's not like because I haven't heard of them, they're not a good company. I'm not saying that at all. But I'll see something that's like, I never heard of these guys, and they're like $400. So then I'll check the fundamentals, and their revenue's like $20 in their earnings, they haven't made a dime yet. And I'm thinking, okay, now it's one thing. Now the reason why it's $400, it, you know, and people can, you can mouth off into there that in the next 10 years it's this massive growth company, blah blah blah. And you know what? Guess what, Carl? I'll believe you. And then all of a sudden we get to the next stock and the next stock, and somebody else says it's this great company and they're going to grow into these earnings. And all of a sudden there's like 20 stocks that are all priced the same way. They're not all going to be the next Amazon. They're not all going to be the next Apple. I mean, somewhere along the line, they're getting...
Steve, you know what? In 1998, when I sold MCS, and then all through 99, I heard people laughing at me the entire time. Well, you know, you got to be in Cisco because, you know, as it doubled and tripled, right? And you know what I said to them? I said, look, over the last 3 years, I have watched dozens of companies IPO, go public. I even got allocations in a few of them through my brokerage and immediately sold them, which made the brokerage very upset.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't care. You know, I made five times my money in 24 hours. You're stupid not to take that off the table. And I said the bottom line is all these companies have claimed the gross domestic product of the world 40 times over. That can't happen.
That's the same. Okay? That's the same calculation I did. I looked to see if they.
And it's what's going on now. Yeah. Okay, is that, you know, by these valuations, they're saying that, you know, the GDP of the world is X. Well, guess what? If you add up all these claims and all of these forward claims on that GDP, because let's face it, every dollar that's spent somewhere, that goes into the market or goes into a company, has to have come out of GDP, right? I mean, that's how you produce it. Okay, so there it is. You've claimed, 20 times the GDP of the world, and you're telling me you're going to grow into this. So you're telling me the GDP of the world is going to expand by a factor 20 over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. No, it's not.
Well, I'll say this to you again, just to be counter, even on this, even when you're agreeing with me, if your money supply is going up 24% a year, every 4 years your GDP is going to double nominally.
Right.
Right.
Except that doubling nominally doesn't help you unless you stay even with it, and the damage that people don't seem to understand, and the reason these attempts always fail throughout history, is that the common person that is out there in the marketplace, he does not have the ability, without using leverage, which if you get it wrong will destroy you, is, let's say he can take 10-15% of his earnings, what he makes, and put it into the market to try to stay even with this thing. The problem is, without taking five times leverage on that, he doesn't stay even. He loses.
Well, but I mean, your Fed, Powell, is getting, I hate to use the term credit, virtually no credit for pumping a $50 stock up to 250. If it drops to 150, he's going to get all the blame.
Absolutely. But the thing is that the reason the common person cannot stay ahead of this game, and the reason that this is unstable and eventually always breaks, is because the common person can't put 100% of their earnings into the market and therefore ride that acceleration and therefore be okay. All right? Because, you know, let's face it, if a gallon of gas is $30 instead of $3, if I make 10 times as much, it doesn't matter. Okay, we don't care what the nominal price level is, as long as what we have and what we make rises at the same rate as the nominal price level. Well, we don't care. I mean, you know, everybody talks about inflation, but inflation has to be calibrated against what the ordinary person has in resources in order to pay for whatever it is. And as long as there's balance there, the unit of account doesn't make any difference. But the common person can't stay even with this. It's impossible. And that's why it folds back.
I'm going to take it one step further. The common person that I remember from the last time this happened, the common person who actually had some money, even if you had a checking account with 10 grand in it, you were able to stay even because the interest rates went to like 15. You were able to stay even on that piece.
And the real rate of inflation was 9.5 or 10.
I don't think you ever got I think when you got 15, it was one of a couple of months when it was 12. Yeah, what I'm saying is you stayed.
There was a spread.
There
right.
was a spread.
There was still a spread.
You got the real rate of interest, which is should be 2.5 or 3, plus the inflation. You pretty much got that the whole way through. Or not the whole way through. You got it the last 5 years of it. I bet the first couple years you didn't. You were still getting
it. But, Chief, remember this, though. The person that did that you thought was okay wasn't. Why? Because he could only put his 10 or 15%
right.
of what he earned into that.
Well, okay, but
he couldn't put 100% in because he still had to pay the power bill and the gas and everything else.
Well, I'm saying the last, let's say the first inflation bout was roughly 1969 through 1982.
Right.
I'm going to say the last, from 1977 on, when I was working at Pullman, if you were in a union or someplace where, I mean, some other people had escalation clauses as well. If you were in a union and you owned a house and you had some money in the bank, you didn't get hurt. You might have got hurt a hair, but not very much. The place you got hurt the most was that your income, you would go up, you went up the levels in the income tax. So
your bracket creeped.
Your bracket creeped. But now there's not as many. But I mean, if you, I don't think, there were like 20 or 30 brackets back in the day, weren't there? 20, I mean, it was a huge amount of brackets. So, like, if you were making 15 grand a year, and because of escalation clauses, 5 years later you're making 20, you pay a lot more tax on the 20 than you were doing on the 15. In terms of percentage.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing was that there was, during that time, I was a teenager and was coming of age, and my dad was a CPA. And I actually asked him at one point, I said, why don't people refuse raises? Because when you actually do the math on it, you lost money.
Yeah, you almost did, yeah. I don't know if you never lost, but you came close.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly didn't get anything out of it. Yeah, I'm like, why would you do this? All you're doing is being exposed to, the government stealing it all.
Well, you never really did. I mean, if you went from, say, the bracket was 16, it would be like 15 grand. Where you have to pay like, say $1,500 plus 10% of the number between 15 and 16. So
right.
When,
right.
So when you got the 16,
it wasn't a linear kind of thing, but it's like, you just sit there and scratch your head and go, wait a minute. I just got bumped, and all of a sudden I get to keep less of the next dollar than I did of the previous one.
But then there was no state income tax. You paid more federal. I mean, all we're doing is trading dollars with this mess. But I guess the point is that it some segments of the population, like Carl's saying, if you own seven houses, this is the best thing that ever happened to you if you're smart enough to sell six right about now.
Oh, yeah.
But if you own stocks and are smart enough to take a stock that's $350, it's worth 50 and you sell it here, but people won't because they're convinced it's going to go to 400 or 450. So you're not going to get that. I mean, nobody rolls out of bed and says, this is enough. And oh, by the way, if it goes up 5% from here, unlike you, they're going to say, I don't mind leaving a little something for the next guy. Most people would swear up and down at their broker saying that you cost them 5% for saying, if a stock goes from 50 to 350, you advise somebody to sell it, and actually they do, which of course they rarely do, and it goes to 360, you cost them $10, right? It's not like...
Oh, yeah, and they're going to cuss you up in one side and down the other.
Absolutely. And, so I mean, it's bizarre world, but at some point, it has to go back. You have to stop it because the people are just going to. You're starting to see it a little bit already. People are becoming irate at the unevenness of it. I mean, the idea of my guys in the building here. A lot of the guys who are the janitors, engineers, whatever you want to call them. They're not. I'm going to say from 10 years ago, they are making. I'm going to say they're. Their number is up, maybe they're up 8% or something, maybe 10. But the inflation's got to be, in some areas, it's got to be, three times. Maybe they're making... They're
oh,
making,
yeah.
You know,
well,
it's
and
not
the
close.
Other thing that happens is that the acceleration that we are seeing, and I've written about this now for more than 10 years, when you look specifically at Medicare and Medicaid, CMS, in the federal spend numbers, when you get to the point that one particular group of people are $1.05 of every penny the federal government spends. The monopolist tendencies within any group that gets to that sort of influence, and the we now drive the train, you do what we say, which has reflected into an awful lot of, you know, what's happened with COVID, because of course that's a medical issue, right?
Yep.
When you look at what's happened there and what's going to happen as that acceleration continues, remember, we went, you know, in the 1960s, 1970s, those programs were 3, 4% of the budget. Now they're 20. And accelerating rapidly. And the numbers that I saw, over the last year implies, you know, this is going to bankrupt the country, and at some point you have to pull back from it. And what they're trying to do instead is, and it's not really the Federal Reserve's fault, it's Congress's fault. Congress keeps allocating the funds, and then the Fed has to mop up the mess.
Well,
so at some point, someone has to step on the neck and say, good hands. Okay, we got the number out, 235, that's all.
Well, let's put it this way, Carl. I'm going to push back here. I'm going to push back only because you're nowhere near dumb enough to think that the Fed is actually independent, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, absolutely not.
So, but if they were independent, obviously it would be different. But we got these numbers coming out here.
It's 235.
Well, 235. Wow, that's a clunk. We'll be right back.
Yep.
S&P up 7. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stash Jackson. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 5.25. The non-farm payroll, 235 versus 720 estimate. Of course, we jumped up the two from the last 2 months, up 50,000 a month. So it's actually, I guess, another 100 in there somewhere. And Maddie, just when you think things can't get any worse, the storms are moving so fast in places like Tennessee. I'm not saying that's where Carl lives or anything like that. They're moving so fast that they're picking up grass destroying like bugs from Tennessee and those people that live there, those people, and dropping them in the Northeast. They're going to mess with everybody's backyard. Just when you think things can't get any worse. just saying. Who would even think of something like that? Well, I guess it does happen. Dax up 2. Footsie up 11. Kekaran up down 41. Completing a week here where not much is going on over in Europe. Kekaran was actually up the other day, and now they're one that's down today. So everybody's pretty much slightly up to almost unchanged on the week. I guess it's sort of a holiday week. Nikkei up 584. It's up 2%. Let's see. Japan's Nikkei 225 jumps 2%. As Carl Denninger resigns. No, the Prime Minister resigns. How would you like that on your resume? I hate it when that happens to somebody. Shanghai down 15.4%, Hang Seng down 188.7%. Yesterday is a way of review. Dow up 131, S&P up 12, NASDAQ up 21, a positive day. Bonds are unchanged at 1.29. Bund unchanged at minus 0.38. And Japan unchanged at positive 0.04. Oil over $70, up 39 cents. Brent up 54 cents, 73.57. Natural gas up 3, 4.67. RBOB up 2 cents to 18. We've got gold up 5.30 now, 18.16. Silver down up 22 cents to 24.14. And our crypto is up, 13.61 to 50,731. So it's up like $800 in the last hour, Maddie. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Looks like traffic building steadily here on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report, just some heavy traffic volume. Eisenhower, you could say the same as for the Stevenson. Only crash appears to be on the south side. Bishop Ford on the inbound side just before Cottage Grove. There's a crash blocking the two left lanes, and that's causing some heavy congestion. So expect delays on the Bishop Ford if you're heading inbound on I-94 from the south side as crews work on that crash. Out west, there's slow traffic on the Tri-State right at the Eisenhower exit ramp. No word of construction or an accident there, but a big slowdown out there. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, sunshine early, then more clouds later on. A high of 77 today. Right now it is sunny and 65 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 101. Right now it's clear and 81. In sports, White Sox were off last night. They're back in action tonight down in Kansas City. That's a 7:10 first pitch. Cubs beat the Pirates 6-5 in 11 innings. The Cubs have won 3 in a row. Diamondbacks were off. They'll host the Mariners tonight at 6:40 Phoenix time down in Arizona. And Northwestern kicks off their 2021 college football campaign this evening as they'll take on Michigan State, a Friday night primetime game as their Big Ten opener. That's an 8 p.m. Central Time kickoff. Chief.
Are either one of those guys factors in the Big Ten?
Factors, I would say probably not, although Northwestern was certainly a factor last year. So they could be, but they lost a lot of guys. So I don't know. We'll see. Michigan State, I don't think, is expected to be very good. Ohio State played Minnesota last night, and that was a pretty good game. Minnesota actually led at halftime, and then Ohio State pulled away in the second half and won by a couple of touchdowns. But Ohio State is just loaded, as they always are, but they have a freshman quarterback, true freshman. He played his first game, and he was a little shaky in the first half, and then in the second half, you could see how talented he was. He's probably going to end up being a first-round pick at some point. They're still the cream of the crop. I mean,
it was only a 13.5 point spread.
Yeah, and Ohio State's head coach still has not lost a single Big Ten game.
Wow,
right, Kyle? Just unbelievable.
I'm looking at these numbers, and I know I'm looking at the page that they give out to the lemmings like me, but the lemming page here. This is the best report I've ever seen. We've got
this. Well, be careful.
I know, but I'm saying from what I'm looking at, it's got the. The people available for work up 200,000. We've got 500,000. This is the household survey now. 500,000 in the labor for working, higher than the 235 number. We've got 400,000 less unemployed, and we've got 100,000 less in the we don't know what the hell they do column. And I don't know that I've seen one that nice across the board in a long time. And yet it doesn't seem to match the household survey. I mean, the establishment survey at all. Why is that?
Well, because the because that's not what the real numbers are, and the let's play the adjustment game is not working out so good this month. There's a few things that just jumped out at me when I looked at this. I was like, oh, you know, that's awfully light compared against where everyone thought it was going to come in, right? First thing is, on the non-adjusted, okay, so August is normally a firing month, as is September, okay, at the lower echelons, typically teenage workers. Why? Because they go back to school, right? So the 16 to 19 cohort usually loses jobs in August and September, and they did this time. So the pattern's holding up for the summer help. If you look at the unadjusted numbers on the household survey, we were down 364,000.
So the adjustment's 800,000?
360.
I'm saying you've got it down 364, and what I'm looking at is it up 5. So the adjustment's 800,000 people?
It's stupid, okay? It's wrong. But the adjustment's that large. And so the unadjusted number is down 364. The other thing is that the unadjusted not in labor force number is plus 1.17 million.
And the adjusted is minus 100,000 or 50,000. How can that be?
But again, August is a month where that normally goes up. Why? Because teenagers, the 16 to 19 cohort, go back to school. They're not in the labor force anymore.
Okay.
So for the month, it comes out, and the BLS tries to, you know, numerically adjust this. All right. All of that looks like the normal seasonal pattern prior to COVID. So if I look at, like, you know, 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, this looks like a completely typical pre-COVID kind of pattern. But the problem that I noted last month has gotten worse, and this has never been seen before in my data tables going all the way back to 1999. And that is that the civilian, non-institutional population, the 12-month delta continues to fall. It is now under 1 million. That has never happened before, ever.
Under what do you mean under 1 million? The
12-month delta in civilian non-institutional population, which is defined as everybody 16 plus, unless you're in jail or you're in a nursing home. Okay? Doesn't matter whether you're working or not. This is the civilian population of people who are 16 years of age and older. It has never advanced on a 12-month rolling basis by less than 1 million people. As of this report, it's plus 965. I want to know where those people went, because the long-term average is closer to 2 million, and this implies that 1 million people are dead.
Right, so
this pattern started in January of this year, not 2020. Okay, not when we know all these people got killed by COVID. This pattern began in January, and it has accelerated to the negative side every single month on an unbroken basis. It is now under 1 million on a 12-month rolling.
Well, I got virtually every other year at the end of the year. I mean, this is my thing here. My thing, the A1 employment thing, is not something I did myself. And in 17 to 18, you've got 1.8 million. 18 to 19, you've got 1.5 million. 19 to 20, you've got 1.2 million. And then all of a sudden, we actually start, we made it to December of 2020, which is kind of weird,
right?
Because why does the number at the end of 2020 not match the December 2020 number?
One thing you have to be very careful about with this particular series, and in fact, anything that's in those unadjusted tables, and especially the non-institutional population, is that January is the adjustment month. The December to January number is where the BLS takes the mistakes that they made throughout the year and fixes them. So you have to be a little careful right around the beginning of the year, because the January number is always going to be wonky to one degree or another, and their guesses, you know. But the thing is, they're usually off a couple hundred thousand, all right? But it's a real, I mean, it's a real, you know, a couple hundred thousand is a lot of people, right?
Well, I'm talking about the, if you look at the year 2020,
right.
The end of the year number is 260,329. But then they give you the last 12 months by month. The end of December number is 261,230. It's 900,000 people off. How can that be?
Well, it's 261,230 is December, and then if you look at January, it's 261,230, then 268,51.
Right.
Okay, in January, and that's the adjustment from the. In other words, it went down.
No, that's not what I'm looking at. Go up and have the year end number 2020. Why is that different?
Right. Well, 2020 December, the unadjusted number for civilian non-institutional population is 261,230.
Right.
Then January is 268,51.
Correct.
It went down.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is the BLS fixed their error over the previous 12 months and revised it, and they do it all in 1 month. They don't go back and revise the previous 12 months.
Okay, all right, fair enough then.
All right, and that happens every single year. So if you look at, for example, if you look at 2019-12, it's 261.81, and in January of 2020, it's 259.502.
Well, Carl, what makes you think that
that number on that December-January shift is normal. It happens every year.
Well, why can't we piece this together with my observations of what's happened in this area here, that people are just gone? Why can't we
say... Where are they gone? Chief, where are they gone to? If they're in the United States, they still count.
I think that a lot of people have gone back to China, I think. And I think a lot of people have gone back to Mexico.
You know, that's a possible explanation, except... Well, yeah, because you know what, people who are not supposed to be here but are, right? Whatever you want to call them, those people do count in the household survey. They do get counted.
Yeah, but you
may be right as to the explanation, but if you're wrong, there are a huge number of people who are dying that we're not accounting for. And somebody's trying to hide, and it's about a million at this point throughout the first 9 months of this year.
Well, how could possibly the amount of messing around, I'm not blaming him specifically, I'm just putting a time frame on that, messing around Trump did with the Chinese visas and the hardships in getting here from some other place, I got to believe that the companies here have way less of people coming in from China and these other places to do their codes and thing than they did last year. And I guarantee you, when you jump the, you know, some of these restaurants are up from $10 to $13, $14, $15, which is not as much as I'd like to see it, that if there was somebody sitting on a sofa in the Hispanic community, those people are not lazy. He'd be working.
Right.
I mean, a lot of them are working construction, I know, because in some areas in construction, there's a lot of catch-up going there, and obviously that pays a lot more. I've heard even some of the landscaping companies are paying $25 an hour now, and they can't find people.
Yep.
So I'm starting to get the feeling that if they're not dragging them out at $25, dragging them out, it's a horrible thing. I mean, hell, $25, $30 to mow the lawn, I never made that when I was mowing lawns. I mean, it's, if I was young, it was doing nothing in the summer.
I'll mow your lawn for $30 an hour.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, I don't know how they make any money, because people, they charge you $40 to do a lawn in the suburbs, and there's
right.
two guys there for an hour. How the hell do you make any dough? I mean, I don't get it. But I think that we've seen some slippage of people. Why would you? People, you know, it's stunning to me, Carl. When people say, "Why would you stay in Chicago?" And then I'll say, "Well, I think."
I mean, that's but migration within the country, which is clearly happening
yep.
to a huge degree. Does not impact this number. You would have to leave the United States. Now, what I would like, I'm going to have to dig into this, because the H-1B thing, okay, could explain this. All right, if the people who were here on H-1Bs from India and China were basically sent home, all right, you know, the company says, sorry, job's gone, bye. Yeah, that would explain this. But I've been following this particular data series now for 20 years on my own. and I've got the Excel spreadsheet up here on my screen, and I have never seen anything that looks like this, ever.
I think we're seeing a lot of firsts, buddy.
Well, I'm saying good economy, bad economy, done that. I have never seen this kind of deceleration spaced now over 8 months. And to see the dislocation in January didn't prick me at all, because it happens every single year. And these guys are always wrong to some extent. And that's when they fix it. That's fine. But when it continued got into 2-3 months, we got into February, March, I'm like, and then as it kept going on, I'm like, now wait a minute. Now we're talking about something that's very statistically significant, because it's just simply never occurred in the past.
No, it's happened in Japan and China, not here. Right?
Yeah, well, and exactly. And the thing is that despite what people will try to tell you, we do not have we do have an older, our population is skewing older. However, despite what people will tell you, people are not dying faster than they're being born in the United States and immigrating, of course. But that's when you take the totality of the American experience, the population is going up, not down. And yet, this is saying that acceleration has been more than cut in half. And so, where'd the million people go?
Carl, are you seeing my buddy here in the building? His family's still down in Mexico, and he gives me horror stories about if somebody's sick, if you don't pay up, you don't even get in the hospital. They just send you home to die. I mean, there's no Medicare.
Right.
By the way, you were mentioning earlier that it's now 20% of the budget. It's also 20% of the GDP, but it's still only 6 or 7% of the CPI basket, right? So.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we don't have that thing, but I'm not so sure. Anyway, he tells me that there's now cities down there that are like 90% gringos, us.
I can believe that. But boy, I'll tell you what, you're really playing with fire if you go do that, because the way that the laws are structured, it is extremely difficult to actually get title to land if you are not a Mexican citizen.
Really?
And people have found this out the hard way over the space of the last 20, 30 years. It doesn't happen all the time. It's like anything else. You think you are a prince because when you look at pesos. I was saying, last time that my daughter and I went on a cruise, we the ship docks in Cozumel. We got off, we go down to the end of the pier, and it shot tequila that would be $20 in a bar here. Are $2 when you convert them to pesos, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you feel like a god because, all of a sudden that 20 in my wallet is enough to get both of us so plastered we can't walk.
Now, wait a minute, you just ordered it to see what the price was. You didn't order it so you could shoot it.
Oh, no, they have a flip book kind of thing of tequilas behind the bar. I mean,
really?
They had 200 different tequilas.
Yeah.
Everything from the, but you go two-thirds of the way back and it's $2 a shot. That same stuff in a bar in America would be $20.
Is it that much better?
Well, it's about the same. Well, I mean, it's the same booze. It's the same booze. But the point is that you can buy something that you'd never sit there and get plastered on.
Right.
Top shelf stuff in the U.S. You'd never sit there and drink that stuff for 3 or 4 hours, just pounding them back, because you'd get a $400 bar bill.
I would. 3 or 4 hours of tequila is a... I hope you're not getting right back on the ship. God.
Well, then you stumble, and the thing is, it's right at the end of the pier, so then you can hold the side of the railing up as you stumble your way back on board.
Then the thing starts moving, you get a little storm, and then the rest is history, as they say.
Well, that could be bad, yeah.
But I mean, there is some movement. I have no idea. I mean, I hear people tell me that they're moving to Costa Rica or doing it. Is it significant at all, or is it just a few people doing it?
No, I don't think it's that significant. And as I've pointed out to people that have talked about on my forum before, it's extremely dangerous because when something goes wrong, you're instantly identified. The IFF is done by your skin, right?
Yeah.
And who's going to get blamed when things go terrible there? It's going to be the ugly gringo, and you're going to be lucky if you don't get eaten.
Yeah, it's a it seems to me, Carl, because I've been talking to a lot, for some reason. One of the reasons is we had one of the groups that I do business with. They had a strategy last year that made, 29% in a year. I mean, so, God, to think people were happy is an understatement.
Wow. Yeah.
But the person who was running it is very bright, and we had actually two strategies. When they say we, I'm part of the group, and, the dividend strategy we had, did very, very well for a dividend strategy. I mean, hell, a dividend strategy was up, I don't know, whatever, some number you would never guess, way above the 4 or 5% you try to get for dividend, because these stocks went way up because of the amount of money being pumped in the system, right? Well, the person running it says, I would never buy any of these stocks here, because the dividend rates now, instead of being 5, is like 3, and we made money in the stock, let's just get out. So they went to some cash in there. And the other stocks, okay, I love this stock from 50 to 200, but I sure as hell don't like it very much at 200. So they raised some cash there. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, what am I doing in cash? Why can't you find me more stocks that are going to make 29% this year? Well, I can't find them. Yeah, well, what do I need? I mean, it's the weirdest conversation. It's like, you don't expect that every year. But yeah, but you did it last year. Well, now you're in cash. Aren't you going to work? Aren't you trying? And you're sitting there listening to people going, what are you talking about? I mean, if a stock runs from 50 to 150, just, and you go to cash, isn't that the way you're supposed to do it? I mean, and if I can't find another one that I think is worth a buy, do I just need to buy something I know is overpriced just to be in something? It is, we've got people's, people's ideas of what to expect. I mean, if somebody told me I rode this stock all the way up, it's too high, I would never buy it here, and I sold it, now I got cash, I'd say there's a pretty good money manager. That's not what people are thinking now. What do you mean? You can't find another one? It's right there. The stuff's going up every day. What's the matter with you?
I mean, I was sitting at the pub, I don't know, 4 or 5 days ago, and we were talking stocks and some of the things that, people have in their portfolio and things like this. And there's one guy that's like, well, I got a triple in this. I said, take the basis out, for crying out loud. Are you crazy?
Yeah,
I mean, at least that way you're playing with the house money. If it crashes on you, you haven't lost anything.
Well, the idea of buying puts, of course, nobody even think of that. But you know what?
We're talking about people that don't know what a put is.
Yeah.
Okay, but still, I mean, the thing is he's crowing about all he's made all his money. I said, did you take the basis out?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, no. I said, well, why? That's stupid. You let the rest run if you really think this is going to go on forever. But at least this way, your cost basis is protected. Absolutely.
Kyle, why do people have a different view of the world when it comes to the market than they do like other things? I mean, if you went out and bought, maybe you did, midlife crisis at one point, if you went out and bought a Corvette, and I'm going to say you can plunk the money down for a Corvette, but you pick up the phone and you call your insurance company, your insurance guy, Matt Weber, and he goes, Kyle, what are you getting, a midlife crisis with that vet? All right, I know you can afford the $80,000 for the vet, but by the way, your insurance is going to be like $8,000 a year. And you're going to say, I don't want to pay $8,000 a year for insurance. What am I going to do, chain this thing to the curb? Do people want it that bad? Or if I ever bang into a fence, it's going to be $100,000 to fix the damn thing? I mean, you may actually say, you're mentally going to say that the insurance cost is up for the right reasons, or for all the proper reasons, not because you want it that high. And you're going to say, I better not buy the vet. Or maybe you'll say that. But when people buy stock and you say, well, this puts are pretty high, well, I'm not going to pay that for insurance, I just won't insure. You go, wait a minute. The reason why they're high is because the market has determined that this stock trading 250 is a little wobbly there. I mean, the reason why the insurance is high is because the risk is high. People don't put that...
That's the thing. I mean, I look at the implied vol table on some of these high-flying things, and they go out 4 or 5 months and take a look at what the implied volatility is on the options. And I look at this and, the implied volatility is, 150%.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean, what does everybody think about this stock? But, I mean, the mentality isn't the same, because people are convinced now after 12 years of this, no matter what it is, it's the Fed's job to keep their stocks. I just hope that I can talk
about it. Well, you know what? That may be true. But on the other hand, you take a look at that implied vol. The implied vol says the guy selling you that put doesn't believe him.
That's right. I would agree. Carl, have a nice weekend, buddy. Are you vacationing? Or what are you doing? Are you traveling?
Yeah, I'm not going to be doing any traveling this week. It's too stupid. Next week I may go do something, but not this week.
All right, bud. We'll talk at you. Nice work on those numbers. SP futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 8. We were down, and now we snapped back up. But at least we're not up as much as we were. I think we kind of go into the weekend right about here. We'll see. Back on Tuesday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.